It's time for overtime.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
In the world of sports, it's all about the playmakers in today's headlines, from locals to the pros, with interviews from local standouts and sports all-stars across the country that will have you talking.
Steps back, three.
Yes, sir.
Get a shot up. This is for the win.
Hear from coaches to players, sports analysts, and broadcasters who are a part of the action every day. Overtime, now with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
It is truly another beautiful day in the neighborhood. Welcome into a Minnesota Vikings Thursday, May 21st edition of the show. Dustin Baker across from me. Stone Baker, I would imagine, will be in the studio sometime soon, as he and many kids out there, hardworking kiddos and teachers and assistants and front office folks, congratulations wrapping up the school year this week. I know my son wrapped it up yesterday. Job well done, everyone. And let's enjoy the summer. School's out forever. Can't wait for summertime as we get going into this Minnesota Vikings Thursday edition of Overtime. Dustin Baker in the studio. Vikings latest news. General manager search has been whittled down to a reported five candidates, one internal, Rob Brzezinski, four external, and a few of them with some overlap and some familiarity with the Minnesota Vikings. We set the stage on that news, the OTA schedule, when you should be paying attention and have your ears perk up this offseason, and remaining fits on the open market. If the Vikings are going to toe dip into the veteran free agent market again at this stage after adding Juwan Jennings a couple weeks ago, what position and what names should we follow out there? Minnesota Vikings schedule breakdown. We got that news dump Thursday night of last week. So we get to talk for the first time with Dustin Baker about the schedule, which I described off air minutes ago as streaky to Dustin Baker this year for the Minnesota Vikings. A lot of wins in a row, potential for big, long losing streak in the middle of the season. We will forecast it game by game. And I'm also going to test the wits of Dustin Baker on the five easiest and five hardest games on the schedule. Hour number two, headlines and highlights. We'll talk about the one loss, 5-1 record for the Sioux Falls Canaries. General manager Dual Higby joining us as the Canaries just getting the season off the ground around 12:20. And we wrap up the show today, NBA, NHL, NFL, and the good, the bad, and the ugly, a segment you can't afford to miss at the end of today's program. Let's get right into game two last night in the Western Conference Finals. I got to tell you, I had a coworker here say yesterday, or maybe it was the day before, hey, I really like SGA, but watch him play a little bit closer next time. Watch how often he falls over as soon as he lets the basketball go. Watch how often he runs right into a defender aiming for contact. And I got to tell you, I wish he wouldn't have told me that, because now every time I watch SGA, I'm saying, gosh, come on, stay on your feet, take a real shot, stop running into the defender, trying to draw something. But OKC finds a way to win. SGA really darn good, 30 points, 9 assists. Wemby, fantastic, but not good enough, 21, 17, and 6. The Spurs as a team turned it over 21 times in a 122-113 loss. OKC ties the series at one game apiece. Here's Brian Windhorst. I know the Thunder got back on the right track.
Number one, major move, Mark Dagonal, the Thunder coach, goes to Isaiah Hartenstein as primary defender. Yeah. Hartenstein defends him on 47 plays last night. Wembanyama goes from 21 shots in the paint in game one down to less than 10 in game two. Their interior scoring completely changes. Number two, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has not been himself for the last couple of games. He was averaging less than 30 points. This guy's averaged 30 points for four straight seasons. Back to 30 points last night. He's able to find his way through the double teams. They're double teaming him incessantly. 53 double teams in two games. But number three, and I hate to do this, it's the injuries. Mm-hmm. The injuries are now going to be defining the series going forward. Yes, the Spurs cannot withstand these injuries to their guards. 27 points allowed off turnovers last night. We could play Stephon Castle highlights for the next 5 minutes, but he has 20 turnovers in the two games because the Thunder come at you like thieves. They're slapping at you, slapping at you. They had four guards come off the bench yesterday. Off the bench, they generated 11 steals. It's a terrible cocktail to be down guards and facing the Thunder at the same time. So-
So that's the latest there from Brian Windhorst. Now, Amon Shumpert echoing the sentiment about the injuries for San Antonio. Already down De'Aaron Fox. We'll see about his status for Game 3. Last night, they lost Dylan Harper to a reported hamstring injury. Just how concerning are the injuries for San Antonio's outlook the rest of the way?
I think that OKC wins the injury report in this situation.
Yeah.
Just because that's the thing about OKC. They are so deep a team.
Mm-hmm.
They are not as reliant on somebody getting in a rhythm and having the ball. The Spurs are. And the Spurs also lose the fact that the people that were willing passers as well, the guys that were really good at looking for Wimby, those guys are out.
Those guys will be out. We'll see exactly how long, but Amon Shumpert there on the San Antonio Spurs injuries and more. Stephen A. Smith saying, I'm on OKC now based on momentum and also based on the aforementioned injuries for the Spurs.
It's really tough to call because I walked into this series believing that J-Dub had to be available for Oklahoma City in order for them to win this series. But Harper, look at the way he played in game one, 24-11-7, if I remember correctly. And then to be the kind of player that he is, again, you see the other guys coming off the bench and producing for San Antonio, and you know they've got some bodies. But does that compare to Wallace and McCain and Mitchell and these guys coming off the bench for Oklahoma City in the absence of Jalen Williams? I think that gives Oklahoma City a slight edge in this series against San Antonio. I think Harper's a bigger loss, and that would facilitate Oklahoma City being able to steal one of these games, games three or four.
And that's Stephen A. Smith on the series again last night in the Western Conference Finals. Game two, OKC wins it 122-113. Tonight, game two in the East, Cavs and the Knicks, 7 o'clock on ESPN. New York, of course, with a big comeback in game one, lead the series 1-0, and they're favored by 6.5 points tonight at MSG. A stunner last night in game one of the Western Conference Finals in Denver. Vegas gets an empty net goal late, but they win it against the Avalanche 4-2 to take a 1-0 lead in the series. Here's ESPN NHL reporter Kevin Weeks on how the Avs can get back on the right track.
Don't chase the game. They got to score first, maybe score second, and start playing to their speed. But Colorado's going to have to make an adjustment here because Vegas is forcing them to play different. Colorado likes to play that off-the-rush game, that attack game. So a football term, they love to pass the ball. They love throwing the ball. But they got to kind of slow it down and get more to the run game, basically. They got to go to cycle game in hockey terms. And if Colorado does that, they have the personnel to do it, but are they willing to do it? That's the thing. That's what I'm curious to see in game two.
And again, game one of the Eastern Conference Finals tonight. Canadians and Hurricanes from Raleigh, 7 o'clock on TNT. Carolina minus 200 on the puck line. A reminder, USHL Hockey, Sioux Falls Stampede, one win away from capturing their latest Clark Cup. They lead it 2-0 against Muskegon. Game three coming up Friday, 6:10 in the evening time from Muskegon, Michigan, for the Clark Cup Finals. Major League Baseball, another day, another nice win for Minnesota, settling into pretty darn decent baseball these days. A 4-1 final against the rival Houston Astros. The Twins are 23-27. Joe Ryan, another nice outing that boosts his record to 3-3. Excuse me, here's Ryan on the game yesterday.
I'd say kind of a continuation, just, execute pitches. I think early game has a little bit effect sometimes on the other team, and, with especially the kind of late games we had and the delays and stuff, but, we took advantage of that, and, Crowther had a really, really nice hit to just add on there, and really good defense all around, making it easy. They called a great game, and we had a good plan and executed well.
There's Joe Ryan on the game, 3-3 the record, 3.02 the ERA. Derek Shelton talking about the bullpen that's starting to round into form.
I think we're getting to a fact that we're starting to develop a little bit of identity. I think our bullpen has been such a mix and match, but the more we can put the ball on the plate, you know, we have some guys down there now that have some velo and stuff that's made it, you know, more manageable and functional.
And that is Twins manager Derek Shelton. Twins win 4-1, new record 23-27. Other notables in the AL Central: White Sox lost in Seattle yesterday 5-4. Cleveland beat Detroit in extras 3-2. If in case you're keeping score at home, Guardians are white hot. They've won 8 of their last 9, 12 of their last 15, and the outright leader in the Central with a record of 29-22. One other final from the American League Central yesterday: Boston beat Kansas City in Kansas City. Royals slumping to a record of 20-30. Today and tonight, very light slate. Twins are off. Guardians and Tigers 12-10. Pirates and Cardinals 12-15. Rockies and D-backs. The nightcap from Arizona 8:40. The start time. Over to the National Football League quickly. Rashee Rice. Of course, that's an ugly situation. How ugly will it be, or would it be perceived by a front office personnel or front office there in Kansas City, a guy that used to occupy a general manager's desk in the NFL? Mike Tannenbaum on his read of the situation from a Chiefs front office perspective.
You want to know why GMs put on weight and lose hair? I mean, my gosh, here's a player that has all the ability in the world. You know, they stood by him in thick and thin. And look, he had a bump in the road. It's not the end of the world. But coming off of, you know, a reported knee scope, you want him to have the best rehab possible so he's ready to go for, you know, September. You just got to hang in there, try to educate him on trying to make good decisions. You know, what he just did isn't the end of the world by any stretch. But, Rashee, we want to put you in the best position to be successful. 30 days in jail doesn't help you and certainly doesn't help us.
And again, at face value, smoking marijuana, THC ingestion, probably not a big deal depending upon where you live in this country. But based on the fact that it was woven into a probationary period, don't do that. And Rashee Rice right off a knee surgery, getting ready for an important offseason. Test positive, heads out to jail for 30 days. Not a good look for one of the better young wide receivers in the National Football League. Lastly, from the NFL, quickly, Aaron Rodgers saying, yes, this is my final season. Mike Wilbon, the highlights of a Hall of Fame career for Aaron Rodgers.
The career is one of the great careers in NFL history. Four MVPs.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it only resulted in one Super Bowl championship, and we tend to just forget people the more years we go. It would be sad if we forget Aaron Rodgers in 10 years. People act like John Elway didn't play the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear, he's the great, pump the brakes. We don't need to exaggerate it. He had a great career that's going to result in the wearing of a gold jacket
right
in the Hall of Fame, mm-hmm. as should be.
There's ESPN's Mike Wilbon. Lastly on the scorecard, Lincoln Super Regional action for Nebraska softball gets going this evening at 8 o'clock on ESPN2. They're home to Oklahoma State tomorrow at 4 o'clock ESPN2. Saturday, if necessary, 4 o'clock on ESPN. D2 Baseball, Augustana with a time change due to some forecasted weather. The game time today is now slated for a noon start time. That's Augie Baseball against Central Missouri. Noon start today, Friday at 5, Saturday at 1, unchanged for now. And Summit League Baseball, Jackrabbits, a big-time first-round win over Oral Roberts 7-3. UNC beat Omaha 5-3, so you got the Jacks in Northern Colorado at 6 o'clock tonight. Omaha and Oral Roberts in an elimination game at noon. Very exciting stuff. Summit League Baseball Tournament off the ground as of yesterday. Let's dive across the table now. Dustin Baker, the other half of each and every Thursday edition of the show. Vikings Thursday, my friend. Welcome in. How you doing this week?
Not bad. My kids get out of school today. Last day of ninth grade for my daughter and third grade for my son. And then we leave for our big summer vacation to Italy 3 weeks from today.
All right. So Italy, what is the docket looking like for that? Where are you heading? What are the must-sees, must-dos? How much of the country are you planning on seeing?
We're pretty much going to go all over like we did in Norway in 2024 and Ireland last year. There's some parts of the southern that just too long where we can't quite make it all. But the way that we travel when we do these is we scatter. Like, we don't just stay in Rome for 11 days. We go all over the place. And then the interesting caveat about this trip is normally we rent a car and drive ourselves, but it just doesn't make sense to do that in Italy. It's all train-based. And, you know, some of the, like, the one city's even on water. So, yes, I won't be the driver on a road trip throughout a European country. I will be kind of a pedestrian on the train.
All right, so there's the Italian plan. What notable cities? Obviously, you're probably going to see Rome. Are you guys doing Naples, Milan? What's on the docket?
No, all of those. I think there's only one that she subtracted. My wife planned all of this meticulously, and I can't remember which one she had to put on the back burner. But if it's one of the biggies, we are going there.
And certainly there's a lot to see, including other cities, Modena, Genoa, and Bologna, which, of course, an American baloney in Italy. So we'll wait and see. I'm excited to follow along and hear about that trip pretty darn soon. Vikings news, of course, centered around the general manager search. We'll get the nuts and bolts of that. The finalist list down to five, apparently, although the Vikings aren't really
reporting this. This is all just rumors connected with some confirmation by Jonathan Jones of CBS Sports. What else this week peripherally is kind of moving the needle for those Minnesota Vikings?
Well, absolutely. We'll get this out of the way. So right before I got here, a depth signing, the Vikings added defensive tackle Isaiah Loudermilk from the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Wisconsin Badger, great. Loudermilk, elite Wisconsin name. Go ahead.
And Bert's wearing the Wisconsin shirt today, he can proudly tout that. Loudermilk will be a backup defensive tackle. The Vikings have added a lot of defensive tackles in free agency and the draft, of course, with Caleb Banks and Dominic Orange. And this is a tie to Jared Alexander, who is the Vikings' new defensive passing game coordinator, and Brian Flores spent a year with the Steelers as a linebacker coach. So they're bringing the band back together, at least in a DT capacity. That was the first thing coming into the studio today. The general manager search is down to five guys. Rob Brzezinski is the interim and I guess probably front runner.
Mm-hmm.
Reed Burkhart is another option. Terrence Gray from the Bills. Let's see. John McKay, I believe, from the Rams. He's the guy that looks like he's about 15. And then Nolan Teasley is the finalist. And, of course, this is intriguing, and I'll wait to see who this guy is. But I'm just not completely enthralled by this general manager search because I think when they announce the guy, he's going to look more like a director of player personnel.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're going to keep Brzezinski, and we're going to have this really customary setup that has guys like you going, no, what is this? Like, who's in charge? I think that's how we're going to end up talking about this because I don't think that Kevin O'Connell is going to return to being just a head coach. I think he's still going to have a powerful role. So I think we'll have a verdict in general within the next 2 weeks. And then two other things. The Vikings will play the Ravens this summer at joint practices in August. And Egan, they usually have one team that they square dance with. Last year, that was the Patriots, who later went to the Super Bowl. And then they made the formal announcement that in 2028, the draft will be in Minneapolis. And that's the first time it's been held there. It seems like Roger Goodell and the NFL love assigning the draft to, like, the America's breadbasket. Kansas City, Detroit, Green Bay, Pittsburgh, and Minneapolis is next.
Are you going to plan on attending that? What is your overall desire to go and be a part of that, even for one night, one afternoon?
So right now, I would say probably not, but I'm not diametrically opposed to it. So I've learned through trial and error, if you want to go to the draft, that's great. I went in 2021 to Cleveland, but what you're going to do is to be a part of the party.
Mm-hmm.
And if you like to drink and stuff, like I used to, I'm sober for quite some time now, then go, have a blast, party. But if you want to, like you and I do, study the who's going to get drafted, what trades went where, who's still left on the board, what does my team need? Going to a party and doing that is not conducive to your experience. The best place to watch the draft if you want to be in the nuts and bolts of what's going on is your couch. And so I personally enjoy, you know, I'm 42 years old. I enjoy studying the draft more so than I do going out and partying these days. Can't believe my 22-year-old me would be very disappointed in that. So I will probably just be at home, but I'm open to changing my mind if my family or whatnot wants to go.
And certainly day two, day three, pretty darn friendly. I'll tell you, as somebody that went to the draft in Green Bay, wove the show into the draft that year, that was a ton of fun, but I will co-sign on that in regards to you want the nuts and bolts, you want the immediate highlight package of who your team drafted, who's still out there, top three on the board, names to watch, trades going down, details. In-person's not ideal for that. In-person's kind of like a rock show. They've got acts in between each pick. You don't see a lot of that on TV. They got people coming up there, tossing out T-shirts, talking about charitable giving, other things, weaving it into the fabric of the city. So it's a really cool event. I would say go. I'm still planning on possibly going to Minneapolis in a couple of years for that draft, but I do agree with you that it might not be the best way for draft nerds to spend their time that want all the info possible, unless you're sitting there with a camping chair and a bunch of computers around you in the middle of that gigantic party. Aaron Rodgers, final year, allegedly, coming up here. Do you believe him? And what is your take on the legacy? Of course, he was a hateable figure for you for a long time as a Viking fan, as is your right. But how does that sit with you, the news yesterday, just confirming, yeah, this is it?
Okay, so I never really hated him. He was so damn good, and he is the quintessential Viking killer.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he has 60 touchdowns to 11 picks against the Vikings in his career. He didn't really start getting on my nerves until about 5 years ago, when, to me, it seemed like he turned a switch on in his personality that became him absorbing. And I just don't understand why that happened. So I never was like, God, I can't stand this son of a gun. But I would always roll my eyes that he was so darn good.
Mm-hmm.
I do not believe that this is the end of the saga. I think that he responded in earnest how he felt yesterday. This is it. But they're probably going to go 10-7. They're probably going to lose before the Super Bowl. And then in January, some reporter is going to ask him, like, are you coming back? And he's going to be like, you know what? We just lost. I'm not answering that question. And we're going to do the same thing. I don't think the Steelers will want him back at age 44. It will be trending towards at that time. But no, I will not take that bait that says that he's definitively done. I think he wants you to believe that.
Aaron Rodgers on your quarterback ranking list all time. Of course, a lot of people would say Brady won, most accomplished, best winner. Might not be the most talented. I think Rodgers personally, this is homerish, but I think Rodgers is number one or number two most talented to ever play the quarterback position. You could argue Dan Marino's arm, but Rodgers putting it all together to me feels like one of the top two or three athletes and arm talents and cerebral talents to play quarterback. Where does he rank for you? You don't have to dive in and tell me 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, but is he a top 10, top 5, top 3 guy for you? Where do you have Rodgers, assuming the career ended today? Right now, where is he for you?
Top 10. I would have to do the diligence of listing them out, but it would go Brady, Montana for me at first. I have him kind of in that same category, which is an esteem category with Peyton Manning, where the talent is undeniable, and you know if your team was going against them that you were cooked.
Mm-hmm.
But especially in the last decade, I think he took a little hit for me that even though the Vikings weren't involved, when I watched him play in playoff games, I learned like he's not going to be himself.
Mm-hmm.
And like that's honestly how I felt when they were playing the 49ers. I'd be like, oh, well, at least he's not going to be regular season Rodgers. And that's how I used to feel about Peyton Manning. So that doesn't take away from the overall like legacy. But I think it subtracts him. It puts him in a tier below Brady and Montana, but certainly top 10. I'd have to figure out if that is like 7, 8, 9, or 10 on my ranking.
And then the big question for a lot of fans is he above or below Brett Favre? Which for me, if you're asking me, Bert, you get to choose Favre or Rodgers. End of the game. One final drive. I'm taking Favre. And if you're asking me, you get this guy the entire regular season, the entire season, I'll probably take Rodgers. But the overall take on Aaron Rodgers, and we'll play a clip from Chris Candy later in the show about selfishness and how his selfishness cost him rings. I don't necessarily buy into that. What I do buy into is early on in his career, there was a lot of bad luck woven in. The white hot Giants teams knocked him out. Colin Kaepernick and the Niners. And then late in the career, as you alluded to, Rodgers kind of let the team down in the postseason. Green Bay, specifically in those big spots. If you don't believe me, check out your stats and any sort of game log in recent Packer playoff memory. That is segment number one, Minnesota Vikings Thursday. When we come back, more on the latest Vikings news, a look at the OTA schedule ahead, and reigning free agent Fitz for Minnesota. We will break down the entirety of the 2026 Minnesota Vikings schedule around the corner. It's all wrapped up into an exciting Minnesota Vikings Hour 1 on a Thursday edition of Overtime.
Streaming live online and with the app, this is Overtime with Bert Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Right back with you on this Thursday, May 21st edition of Overtime. School year is wrapping up. Stone Baker, hopefully in studio with us sometime soon as we navigate our collective schedules. We, as in me, off all next week for the Memorial Day travel extravaganza. Hope everybody buckled up for great summer ahead. Dustin Baker across from me, hour number one. We touched on the latest Vikings news. The general manager search has been whittled down to 5 candidates. Rob Brzezinski likely to remain with the team. Whether or not he's the favorite or not remains to be seen. I would lean, yeah, he's favored to be the guy, but we'll see about other personnel adjustments. And if Brzezinski does get the job, something to monitor, which I haven't talked to you about, is will he add to the personnel department now that he has control over it, if that ends up being the case. So we'll talk about that in just a moment. OTA schedule. What can you tell us about the Vikings OTAs this offseason and the schedule that lies ahead for them?
So I believe they get cracking on the 26th, which puts us in the middle of next week. And then OTAs are kind of weird. They're like they're a cool title, but then you get there and there's really not much fanfare from it. You just like to see who's showing up, or if your team has, you know, holdout candidates, you want to make sure that they've got their stuff together. And then they're kind of staggered, and then you get into June with the mini camp, and then there's a break, and then training camp. So the cool part right now is roster-wise, and I've felt this way pretty much every time I sit down at my desk chair, is roster-wise, the Vikings are in pretty good shape, especially after the Juwan Jennings move. So right now, we're kind of in a holding pattern to figure out what might be next, and thankfully we have this somewhat intriguing general manager search to pique our interest.
Let's talk about confidence in the team, because, of course, last year at this time, all the Viking fans were thinking, we got J.J. McCarthy, we got this landing spot, we got the offensive line solidified, the defensive line solidified. I feel like the confidence last year was there for 10, 11 wins, and, of course, the only bugaboo was, well, if he comes out and looks like a rookie, I still think we'll win 7, 8, 9 games. Ended up winning 9 games last year with all the turmoil and all the injuries, etc., with Wentz and McCarthy. This year, how confident are you right now? Do you kind of still feel like a 9, 10, 11 win team today?
So last year I was confident. I was one of the guys you just talked about. Mm-hmm. And the only thing at all that I didn't consider was that J.J. McCarthy would be injury prone. I mean, I even said on your show that he's going to be good. It's just a matter of how good. And I still believe McCarthy will be good in the NFL. It's just that I can't control or dictate whether or not every Monday we have to worry about if the guy is healthy or not, you know, after the game. So I will say that I am more confident this year in the Vikings than last year because there is certainty to me at quarterback. Now, Kyler Murray has the same thing. He might, you know, he could get hurt too. He's missed 26% of all career starts due to injury. But if you think about this, Bert, the Vikings have the league's third best defense, DVOA, EPA per play. And if that regresses, it's probably not going to get horrible. It'd probably be like number 11 versus number 3 if there's any regression. You have the weaponry in Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, Juwan Jennings, Aaron Jones, our guy, Jordan Mason, TJ Hockenson. That's fine. The two big things, offense and defense, should be in decent shape. So I don't look at this roster and think, oh, well, hopefully they get to 8-9 or 9-8. Like, the only thing that worries me at all is the fact that the NFC North is brutal. Mm-hmm. All the teams are good. 6 games are going to be slobber knockers. So I'm more confident this year because the defense is there. Brian Flores did not leave. I don't look at Kyler Murray as this guy like, well, can he fit into Kevin O'Connell's offense? I don't think of like that at all. The guy has a rocket arm. He's faster than Justin Jefferson, and he's the 5th most accurate quarterback in NFL history. So I think this thing will work. Right now, when I go through the exercise of, you know, circling wins and losses, I usually come up about 10-7 or 11-6.
Okay, so there it is. We'll dive into that schedule game by game here in just a moment. Roster holes, we'll talk about remaining fits on the open market and free agency, other veteran names to know. If you look at the Vikings roster, there's two things, and they both show up on defense for me that I'm like, we'll see about how this works out. The one thing is defensive line. So in this base 3-4, in the starting lineup today, rookie Caleb Banks, rookie big citrus Dominique Orange, and third year highly paid player now, Jalen Redmond, on that defensive line. So that's a lot of inexperience. Redmond, of course, the experienced elder statesman year 3 in the NFL. Behind them, you got Levi Drake Rodriguez, third-year player. Tyrion Ingram Dawkins, second-year player. And then a rookie, undrafted free agent, Eric Johnson II, also listed as a second-line defender. So defensive line for me, there's a lot of high ceiling here, but the floor could be pretty low based on inexperience and injury concerns with Banks. And then in the secondary, that's the other spot for me that I feel a little topsy-turvy on. James Pierre, Isaiah Rodgers, Byron Murphy. The latter two there, Rodgers and Murphy, are experienced veteran playmakers, guys that I feel pretty trustworthy of. But James Pierre, low dollar free agent signing, and then pretty unproven guys behind them. So where do you stand on those two positions, the confidence there? And also, if we could tie that into potential free agent fits, maybe a Marshawn Lattimore, Trayvon Diggs, somebody like that could make sense.
Let's start at cornerback, and your concern is valid, especially like everything you just said. If we were sizing up, let's say, the Chargers or the Commanders, I'd be like, yeah, this team probably needs one more cornerback. And there's a bunch of them out there you can sign. I mean, Trayvon Diggs is still a free agent. But I think we said this about a month ago on your show. We're talking about Brian Flores' defense. He doesn't, like, the evidence shows he doesn't really care too much about cornerbacks like other defensive coordinators was. Last year, we rolled into this thing with Byron Murphy, Isaiah Rodgers, and Jeff Okuda. We tried to tell ourselves Jeff Okuda was going to break out. You know, he's finally figured it out. Absolutely not. This year, it's deeper than that. It's Byron Murphy, Isaiah Rodgers, James Pierre, rookie Charles Demings, and then Dwight McLaughlin, who we still have high hopes for. on a normal football team, I would look at this depth chart and say, they'll probably sign one more guy. I don't think it's going to happen because last year they didn't. You know, Fabian Moreau could come back. He was a pretty darn good CB3 last year. That would be the extent of which I'd see cornerback as a roster change here. And then on defensive tackle, they did sign Loudermilk, so maybe that's all they need there to hedge the bet. They better be able to play Big Citrus or Caleb Banks early, or at least sometime in 2026, because we are on this really long Vikings rookie draft drought of most of them not being very good. So I'm just excited that they philosophically shifted to getting rid of, like, first of all, they didn't used to care about defensive tackles at all. They'd get Jonathan Bullard, Shamar Stephen, Armin Watts. We're good. Last year they got Jonathan Allen and Javon Hargrave. We're like, okay, cool. These guys were Pro Bowlers at one point. Then they were just mid. They weren't that great. So they cut them, and now they have embraced youth. So gradually, someone there has realized that you can build the defense, you know, in the trenches from the inside out. So I don't think that they need any more defensive tackles. They spent a lot of capital on Orange and Banks, so that's not a big concern for me. I would say right now, based on how Flores usually constructs his defense, the team probably needs one more pass rusher on the edge, and that leads me to somebody like Leonard Floyd, who has a connection to Kevin O'Connell from the Rams Super Bowl days. And if that's not right, then maybe Jake Galladay, their second-round guy, is just truly a hybrid who Flores will deploy kind of like Andrew Van Ginkle on the edge and off the ball.
And there's the latest roster questions for the Minnesota Vikings. This exercise is going to be fun. Just popped into my head. The Minnesota Vikings in this NFC North division. If I were to tell you, you put your horse blinders on. If I were to tell you, end of the year, that the Vikings will have swept one divisional opponent, split with one divisional opponent, and swept by another, which teams are you choosing for those three markers? Who do you get swept by? Who do you sweep? And who do you split with this coming year for the Minnesota Vikings?
Okay, so let's. We know they're going to split with the Packers. That's tradition. I would say that... split. That's what. They'll split both those. I would say they would sweep the Bears because I'm going to be saying this a lot all summer and people aren't going to like it. I think the Bears take a little bit of a step back because of all their close game luck last year. When you dig into the numbers, folks, usually those teams that win those close games come crashing back to earth and they finish near 500. So I would say that if they're forced to fit into this criteria, the Vikings would sweep the Bears and then begrudgingly somehow the Lions get the best of them both times.
All right. Like that exercise quite a bit. I think the Packers are the team that'll sweep the Minnesota Vikings. We'll wait and see. Dustin Baker, the other half of our show, each and every Thursday. When we come back, we go game by game, the Minnesota Vikings schedule breakdown. If I have to run to work, the most likely day to do so will be Monday, September 14th, as the Packers are in Minnesota the day prior, which is the sunshiniest, warmest run I possibly have ever had, with that long-standing bet with the listeners out there running to work if and when the Vikings ever beat my Packers again. The second matchup between the two, a little bit cooler, Sunday, November 15th. We break down the schedule and more coming up next on this Thursday edition of Overtime.
ESPN Sioux Falls gets you back to more of Overtime with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Right back with you on this Thursday edition of Overtime. Exciting segment ahead. The Minnesota Vikings schedule is here as of last week. They will play one preseason home game. That'll be Saturday, August the 22nd. They'll be on the road the week prior at the New York Giants, on the road the week after at the Denver Broncos. Their home preseason game will be against the Baltimore Ravens noon on Saturday, August 22nd. One preseason game. Are you going to be there?
No, I don't. We went to the first couple years when the U.S. Bank Stadium opened, but preseason, I usually give those tickets away. It's more for the amateurs, if you will.
Mm-hmm. So preseason, you can call me an amateur. I'm just a nerd is what it is. I like preseason football. I don't know about necessarily going, especially not to a stinky Vikings game.
But I'm not going.
But Packer preseason, you can count me in just because I like to digest and look at all the rookies and UDFAs looking to make the roster ahead. Well, we got a fun one, my friend. We're going to have a lot of fun with the season opener. Packers, Vikings, Minneapolis, 325, big slate, big time. CBS will have the TV broadcast Sunday, September 13th. Before we dive into the wins and losses here. I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about easy and tough games on the schedule. Where do you stand as the five toughest games? I have four of them in the middle of the season. Where do you stand with the toughest games on this schedule from top to bottom?
Well, you're not wrong. My toughest games are, and I'll rank them, the single toughest because of where it's at in the season and the fact they don't play the Bills very often is the Bills in Week 9 at home. For me, the second toughest will be at the Patriots on December 10th because we are going on four straight years of Thursday night football on the road, and the Vikings have lost pretty embarrassingly the last three times. They just don't play well in that spot. I wish that we'd finally get some home games for Thursday night football. Number three would be at Mexico City against the 49ers. Number four for me is at the Lions on November 1st, and then number five at the Packers on November 15th, smack dab in the middle of the month.
And again, this is quite the out-of-the-bye schedule. If Daniel Jones is ready to rumble for the Colts early or at this stage, you got the Colts at home, at Detroit, home to Buffalo, at Green Bay, and then internationally at home against the San Francisco or against neutral site, against the San Francisco 49ers, and then... So the middle of the season is absurd. The back end of the season is kind of the time to stack some wins. Atlanta, Carolina at home, at New England. I think that's a very winnable game. I do. Home to Detroit, home to Washington, at the Jets, home to the Bears. That final stretch seems pretty darn favorable. Let's start at the top here with the Green Bay Packers. Week one, this is going to be all the storyline. A lot of eyes on Micah Parsons, Tucker Kraft, Zach Tom for the Packers, who's the RB2. For the Minnesota Vikings, what does everything look like? What is the recipe with a dash of this and a sprinkle of that? What does it all look like when it's together? How does it taste for Minnesota in the opener? That's the big storyline. Sunday, September 13th, win or loss against the Packers at home for you?
I believe they will win this one. I don't think that they will spank the Packers, but I think they'll take it by a touchdown or so. I want to point out, in case I forget in the next 10 minutes, that there's this shift on the Vikings schedule. All of a sudden, games that would normally be listed at noon, as we call them in the Midwest, are now at 3. There's only two noon games on the Vikings' home docket. Usually we have like 6 or 7. So all of a sudden, all of these games are at 3 o'clock besides two of them. And then for storylines, I want to point out that Kyler Murray, his first transaction outside of the Cardinals, is going up against his former coach, Jonathan Gannon, who is the defensive coordinator of your Packers. And then we'll have the Javon Hargrave quasi-revenge game.
Mm-hmm.
He signed with the Packers this offseason. So ultimately, I think the Vikings will win this because I am a believer in the Kyler Murray experiment.
And since I am a homer, I will take the Green Bay Packers in that ball game. Week two at Chicago. This is a tough start to Green Bay, Chicago, Tampa. Week two at Chicago. Win or loss there?
I have a loss because I don't want to make people roll their eyes that the Vikings win games against their rivals right out of the gate. You know, this one will be tight. It'll be sloppy, gross because it's Soldier Field, but I think the Vikings will start the season 1-1.
I've got a little bit bearish start for Minnesota. Stay with me, though. I'm not all hater, mostly hater of the Vikings, but not all hater. 0-2, I got the Bears winning at home in that one at Tampa for week three. I've got them with their first win of the year against Baker Mayfield and the Bucks.
All right. When I did this exercise, I had to make sure I didn't get too many wins. So this is one of the ones where I assigned a loss because I didn't want the Vikings to be 12-5 in my estimation. So I have a loss at the Buccaneers before they start to rebound thereafter.
Miami Dolphins week four, the New Orleans Saints on the road week five, which, by the way, do not sleep on the Saints. They loaded up wide receiver talent. That roster is ascending. You get a feeling that they're going to be a little bit better this year. I don't know how formidable, but you can't circle that as a absolute, yes, that's going to be a win. But I have it down as a win, so three straight for me heading into the bye. I've got the Vikings at 3-2 entering the bye week. What say you about the Dolphins and Saints games?
I have them defeating the Dolphins, which I consider one of the easier games on their schedule. This will be the first time Brian Flores has coached against the Dolphins in a defensive coordinator capacity since they controversially let him go, 5 years ago now? And so Frank Smith, he also came over. He's the Dolphins offensive coordinator, and now he's the Vikings assistant head coach. I have the Vikings winning this one. And then I also have them defeating the Saints. It's cool when your team has Brian Flores because when you know he's going against a young quarterback like Tyler Shuck, you can trust him to frustrate the hell out of that guy. So I will take the Vikings over the Saints here. I'd like to point out, if you need an excuse to go to New Orleans for the first time in your life, tickets for this game right now are only like $50 or $60.
In New Orleans, great city. I'll tell you also that is a bucket list place to go visit. So you've got the Vikings at 4-1 entering the bye week, correct?
No, I have 3-2.
That's right. Mm-hmm. So I've got them 3-2 as well. 4-1 to me would enter that little absolutely positively annoying Viking fan base, 4-1 entering the bye, is where you'd be with, oh, we're going to the Super Bowl. And then things get really serious. Indianapolis Colts out of the bye. I have that as a win. A lot of that dependent upon Daniel Jones and what he looks like. If he looks like he did last year early on, as much as it's easy to hate Danny Dimes and talk junk about him, I think that the Colts were a really good team when he was healthy early in the year. I got a win for Minnesota at home against Indy.
I have that too. Right off the bye, should be well rested, and I do not fear Daniel Jones as an opponent, even though he's cooked the Vikings once or twice back in the 2022 season. So I have them winning fresh off the bye before, in my estimation, they go on a little skid, which will be unfortunate.
I've got them on a big skid. I got four L's in a row at Detroit, Buffalo, Green Bay, San Francisco. Loss, 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 loss. And that gets me so darn happy in the middle of the season for Minnesota. That would drop the record with them to 3-6 at that stage. But again, don't worry. I got the Vikings on a little miniature run later on in the season, but I have four straight losses. How many of those big four games at Detroit, home to Buffalo, at Green Bay, and then internationally, south of the border in Mexico City, how many wins are in there for you?
All right, make no mistake, this is murderer's row. At the Lions, against the Bills, at the Packers, at the 49ers in Mexico, that is brutal. I have them losing to the Lions in week 8, and then I have them losing at home to the Bills because the Bills are just good. I think this will be a moral victory of sorts where, hey, the Vikings only lost because Josh Allen did Josh Allen things. And then, you know, kind of at a low point at 4-4, they're going to go to Green Bay. Let's see, that's November 15th. They're going to lose that one. And then we'll be at a crossroads to figure out if this team is going to be a playoff contender or a pretender. I have them winning in Mexico City over the 49ers. There's, in the last, let's see, since 2023, the Vikings have played really well against Brock Purdy and the 49ers, and he just has not had their number. So I think that will continue against Flores. That's the common denominator here. So give me a win over the 49ers.
If you're keeping score at home, the first three games, really tough. A little bit of a lax two games into the bye, and then five really hard ones rest of the way, mixed bag, but mostly winnable in my estimation. So after the Niners game internationally, they're going to have 1 week to get back home and host the Falcons, and then they'll host the Panthers the week after that, Sunday and Sunday. I think both those are wins. I somehow, some way can be talked into the Bucks, Panthers, Falcons, or the Saints being decent this year. I don't think all of them will be, but I think the Vikings will sweep those two, Falcons, Panthers, out of their international trip. What about you?
For the third year in a row, the Vikings are going to play the Falcons at home. It's kind of weird. I don't know why this keeps happening, just schedule oddity. They will beat the Falcons here. I hope Tua plays this game, so it'll be the Flores versus Tua revenge angle. And then, even though the Panthers made the postseason last year, they still don't intimidate me very much. So I have, out of the three-game skid, I have them winning three in a row, which would put the Vikings heading into Thursday Night Football, I believe, at 8-5.
All right, so a little bit of a short week. They're going to be on the road in Foxborough for the New England Patriots. I got that as a loss, but I will tell you, like I said moments ago, I think that game is very winnable. Mm-hmm. Just like the Bears in the NFC, I think the Patriots are going to regress. Maybe not quite notably, but I would say 3-4 wins are going to get wiped off. I still think they're a playoff team. I still think they're likely-ish to win the division, but I think there's some regression in the fold for Coach Vrabel and the New England Patriots. So a loss there for Minnesota, but close game, winnable game. And then Detroit, this is going to be a Sunday game. Long week of prep for a home Sunday night game. I like the Vikings in that spot.
I need to see the Vikings win on Thursday Night Football on the road to believe it. It's turned into one of those things where you see the schedule, you know, in May and you're like, oh, that's a loss. Exactly what we're doing right now. And for me to believe otherwise, they have to go out and do it. Now, the thing I just said about Tyler Shuck and the Saints, about you can trust Brian Flores to frustrate a young quarterback, that will apply or should to Drake May, who looked like crap in the AFC Championship and the Super Bowl, even though he was a stud MVP candidate until those two games. I think that Flores will play him well, but ultimately I'm not going to call this a win. That puts me heading into week 15 with a 7-6 Vikings team. At home against the Lions, I think they will split this one and win it to go to 8-6.
There you go. In the final three games, home to Washington, at the Jets, home to the Bears, far from murderer's row. I got a win over DC at home. That game to be determined, by the way. It's interesting. So Sunday, that Lions game, to be determined the following week, then a Sunday at the Jets, and then to be determined for the Bears. So a lot still up in the air on the schedule. The opponents and the weeks are solidified, but the official day, Saturday or Sunday, still to be determined, and I don't know if it's possible to flex into Thursday night. I don't think so. I think the Thursday games are solidified there. But Washington home, week number 16, that's a win. At the Jets, that feels like the most likely win on the entire schedule for me.
Cade Klubnik by that time.
And then, yeah, that's true. And then Chicago at home, I'm going to say loss there. And the reason I will is because I think that this could end up being a play-in postseason game. Mm-hmm. Either way, for the Bears and Vikings, I'm not saying the Packers are going to be ahead of them. I hope they are. But I think these late-season NFC North games are going to be the playoff posturing, playoff seeding games. I think the Bears get you guys at home in that one. So I do have the Bears sweeping Minnesota. I've got the overall Vikings record at 9-8. Finish yours out.
All right, so when we hit the season's low point after losing to the Packers, I had them at 4-5. They will end up winning these final three, in my estimation, over the Commanders at home, at New York Jets. If they lose that one, we're going to have problems. And then at home against the Bears, they will win because it'll make it a season split. So that brings me down to an 11-6 Vikings team, and I think that will they'll be good enough to maybe win the division, probably get them in as a wild card. The other thing on the schedule that I forgot to mention when we were going through this exercise is there is no West Coast game this year. Usually the Vikings will at least once go to the West Coast for something, usually the 49ers or whatnot. This year, the westernmost games for the Vikings are Mexico City and Minneapolis. That is the extent of the schedule, so they're not traveling all over the place. And then for those who like to go to games at US Bank Stadium, the Carolina Panthers have never played the Vikings at that stadium with fans in attendance. So if you're a Panthers fan, you'll get to see your squad in that building for the first time.
There you go. So the home schedule again, preseason, Baltimore at home. That'll be Saturday, August 22nd. You've got them at 11-6. I got the Vikings at 9-8. That's predictable because I'm a little bit more of a hater than you would be to your own team there. 9-8 the record for me, but I'm going to ask you a question. If, which is not the case anymore, if your season tickets come in a big book and you got all your tickets laid out on your couch and you're out to dinner and somebody breaks in and steals all your tickets except for two home games, what two home games are you saying? Please don't take these. I would really like to go. So the home games, Packers, Dolphins, Colts, Bills, Falcons, Panthers, Lions, Commanders, and Bears. You got to choose carefully. I would imagine one of these, please, to Mr. Robber, would be don't take my Josh Allen Buffalo Bill tickets for the Vikings. Am I right there? And what's the other game you'd like to keep?
Yeah, because they only come around once every 8 years. And the last time they came around, it sucked. We were so, like, I can't express to you enough, like, it's been so long that going into that game, week two of 2018, the Vikings felt like a dominant force because of how they finished 2017. The Bills were just like the Jets right now, or the Browns, where they're just kind of like, they're not going to do anything. Mm-hmm. Josh Allen, really? Who's that? And then they beat us. So I want some redemption there. I don't want this burglar to steal the Bills tickets because it's also Monday Night Football. And then I have to be there for the beginning of the Kyler Murray era because I will continue to say this, that there is a really good chance, and I believe it, that he will be the Vikings quarterback for the next 5 to 7 years. And so I want to be there to see that go live, and it's natural, you know, Vikings-Packers, you got to be there for it.
Heck of a way to open up the Kyler Murray era with a massive loss to my Green Bay Packers in week number one. That's Dustin Baker. Always great to talk to you, my friend. We'll do it again sometime really darn soon.
All right, man. Thank you, sir.
All right. Dustin Baker of VikingsTerritory.com, DraftHuddle.com, Vikes Now, the YouTube show. And that is a very quick, as always, and fun Minnesota Vikings hour number one on a Thursday. Hour two still ahead. Headlines and highlights. Sioux Falls Canaries talk. They're off to a nice start to the season. General manager Dual Higby swings by in about 25 minutes. And we finish up the show with everything you may have missed. NBA, NHL, NFL, and of course the good, the bad, and the ugly. That's next on a Thursday, May 21st edition of Overtime.